And kids, kindergarten through second grade, if you're headed to story time, you can start making your way that way. Follow him if you don't know where you're going. You're headed to the library. It seems to be really fun, so you'll want to get that. And we're working our way through the book of Hebrews, and we're in Hebrews chapter 12. And we started last week looking at 12 verses 1 through 17, and we're going to continue looking at verses 1 through 17. And I was thinking this week about the dynamic of experiencing the book of Hebrews, and I was reminded of a cultural experience I had a couple years ago. Our church, we partnership, and then I teach with a group called OCPN, which is Orlando Church Planting Network, and every year we bring in anywhere from 2 to 6 guys who are looking to plant churches in the greater Orlando area, and you know, you've gotten to meet many of them, and from one of the classes about 2 years ago, I don't remember Eduardo, who came and preached for 3 weeks for us. He brought the car parts and had the car part analogy. He's from Puerto Rico and helped plant a Spanish-speaking church in Winter Garden. And in his class, there were also 2 guys from Brazil who are coming to plant Brazilian-speaking churches in the greater Orlando area. Portuguese-speaking churches, and when we were laying out the schedule, it was also a World Cup year, and when we were laying out the schedule, we did not factor into the schedule the Brazilian national team's World Cup schedule. And so we didn't realize that there could possibly be a conflict. And I had scheduled my preaching class just so happened to be the exact same time that there was a World Cup game happening. And so the two Brazilian students came and just very graciously and tenderly said, like, is there any way we can not have class so we can watch this game? And try to explain, you know, like in our country, these are like national holidays. The kids don't go to school. We don't go to work. And it's just like, I'm so sorry. Like, we obviously, like, you know, I get it. I'm a sports fan. We will, here's what we'll do. Let's cancel class, but we won't just kind of cancel it. Will you host like a party, and we'll come to your place and we'll watch the game together? And so they kind of invited their friends, and so I had the experience of watching the Brazilian World Cup game with about 12 impassioned soccer fans. And it was a unique experience, because I've grown up my whole life living with impassioned fans. And one of the things that really struck me, because, I mean, they streamed the game, we're watching it in Portuguese, so I was watching the game in Portuguese, and we were eating picanha and had, I mean, it was wonderful. But one thing that struck me is, like, you could not know anything about soccer and not know one word in Portuguese, and you could follow the flow of the game just by the energy and the intonation of the announcers. And so, like, when the game starts, they are elevated. And so it's like, welcome to and it's high and it's exalted, and then you kind of come down, and then there's a steady energy, and then every time the ball gets close to the other team's goal, the pitch goes up, and it's and then it's coming and it's coming and it's coming, and then if there's a goal, I mean, there's explosion. And it's, and then you start hearing the names, and it's just boom, name, 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 and then it's golazo, and it's an explosion, and then it goes. And so you could not know anything about soccer or know one word of Portuguese, and you can follow the flow of the game. And one thing that struck me about this particular game, like, they scored, you know, 2 or 3 goals, and by like the second or third goal, I mean, the game was pretty much secure. But it wasn't over. So what just needed to happen is they needed to just kind of endure till the end. And that's kind of like the book of Hebrews. When I was thinking about it this week, it's almost like we need to get a Brazilian soccer announcer to perform the book of Hebrews because it starts out exalted and it starts out elevated, like in these past days God used to speak through the prophets, but now he has spoken through his Son, and it lifts us up into the heavenlies. And then it kind of comes down and it's just kind of doing work. And it's just good, solid work with some pretty elevated but serious theology. And then we get to chapter 11 and it starts just firing out these names of faith. And we're getting around the goal and we're about to score. And it's elevated. And then at the beginning of chapter 12, we score the victorious goal. And it's Jesus. We look to Jesus, and he has accomplished the race. He is finished. He is the great victor, and he has won the victory. And then now we settle in. The game's not over, but he has won. And so we still need to keep going, but we go in a different register. We go knowing that if we can just keep going, the victory has been won, but there's a way we go. To kind of change the metaphor, we transpose the key into a different kind of tune, and we're moving forth in victory. And so we're looking at chapter 12, and in one sense, he's won the victory, but we keep going forward knowing that it's not quite over yet, but we go with a different energy. And so we're looking at 12, and the image that he uses, the speaker in Hebrews, uses in 12 is the image of an endurance race, that we're called to run this race. And last week what we looked at is this idea that God is our trainer, that he has to train us so we can endure and we can keep going. And then what I wanted to look at last week, but we didn't get to, is as we're trying to keep going, even though Jesus has secured the victory, what are the things that can trip us up? You know, if it's a race, we've been going. If we want to keep with the soccer analogy, we're in the 80th minute, so there's still at least 10 minutes to go, so we're tired. The victory is secure, but we have to keep going. And so what are the things that would cause us to stumble or to quit, to fall? And so we're going to look at a couple of these things here. And what we're going to see is in this race, as we're trying to run, the most dangerous things that would cause us to stumble or cause us to quit running the race aren't necessarily dangers that are out here. They're dangers that are in here. They're internal, not necessarily external. They're the dangers of a weary heart. They're the poison that can get in us of a bitter heart. They're the temptations that can come of trading lesser things for the greater thing that's just around the corner. So let's look at some of these dangers that can trip us up. Last week we looked at the race we're called to run and called to lay aside every weight and fix our eyes on Jesus. But what happens when we grow weary? We're just tired. Or what happens when sin entangles us or bitterness takes root? So today we want to press deeper into that call and then hopefully see that the greatest reward of all is not just finishing, but it's seeing God at the end of the finish line. So first, let's look at the struggle of the weary heart. And then we're going to look because 12 through 17 really gets at the answers or how we deal with the difficulties. So how do we deal with these? And so 12 through 13, let's read that, but then we'll have to look back at the difficulties that it's recommending or giving the solution to. Therefore, in verse 12, lift up your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. So strengthen your feeble arms and your weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled or broken, but rather be healed. So the idea here, again, the Christian life, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's an endurance race. And we're called not just to run, but we're called to keep running and to press on, and the road is long, and the body gets weary, and the road's not just straight, it can be winding, and there's dangers, and one of the first ones is that we just get weary. Now cycle back and look how this verse comes up in verse 3. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you do not grow weary and faint-hearted, or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when you are reproved by the Lord. So here, the problem is that in any endurance race, you just get tired. You get weary. And now one of the challenges, because one of the things the Bible loves to do, is it loves to take physical realities that we know and teach us spiritual truths through those. So it's one of John's favorite ways to teach and one of Jesus' favorite ways to teach. And often, like, one of the challenges is, okay, are they just talking about physical things or is it talking about spiritual things? You know, man doesn't live on bread alone, but every word that comes from the word of God. And Jesus, I'm the living water, just as your body needs water, so your soul needs my spirit. And so it loves to take physical things and teach us spiritual truths through those. And these two words here are very interesting, the words for weary and then faint-hearted. So what is it talking about? Is it talking about a state of the soul, or is it talking about a state of the body, or is it talking about the same thing together? So even in the way I phrase it, is it talking about something that happens to your body or something that happens to your soul? And is the answer yes? Like, can you even disentangle the two? So let's look at that word weary. Normally the way that word is used in the Bible is it's talking about physical tiredness or physical sickness. So like in James 5:13, it's what it's talking about. The elders come through, and if somebody is sick, physically sick, it's what they pray for and lay hands on. In classical Greek, it's talking about either physical sickness or mental exhaustion. So physical sickness. In Isaiah 1:14, on the Septuagint, it's the word where God says, I am weary, I am sick of all of your false worship, your false sacrifices. Psalm 6:6, the psalmist says that he's become weary for all of his crying. He's cried out so much, his body is weary. And then that word faint-hearted is interesting because it's the word that, at least in the athletic context, is used for collapse. It just means you collapse. So you stop and you just, you give up. And so it's more than discouragement. So weary can often be used just for discouragement. And then that faint-hearted is a word just means for collapse. And so you think, all right, what's happening here? There's this unique interplay between the internal and the external, the mental and the physical, the emotional and the physical. And you know those things, like if you're in tune to yourself, you know how intertwined those things are. You take like one illustration of dealing with something like depression. When you're dealing with depression, if you just even take the internal state of a human soul, a person, I believe there's the interplay of three connected things: the physical, the physiological, and the spiritual. So there's the physical realities that have to do with things like sleep and strength and just your physical makeup as a human. So for example, it's been basically proven that so many people struggle with sleep. So just because you have sleep issues doesn't mean you struggle with depression. But every single person who struggles with depression has sleep issues. And then they also say, like, one of the most effective treatments for depression is basically doing squats, physical exercise, getting outside, walking. So there's a physical component that just cannot be ignored. But that's not all there is. There's also the physiological, meaning the neurons and the synapses, whether they're firing in your brains and your hereditary and genetic makeup. That's a reality. And there's just certain chemical makeups that, you know, pills can help with. That's part of it. And then there's the spiritual reality that has to be factored in. All of those are intertwined in such a way. And if you try to deal with the physiological piece with a spiritual solution, you can cause problems. But if you try and deal with the spiritual piece with a physiological solution, you can cause problems. You need wisdom to know how it all interrelates. And that's just the internal piece. There's also the external piece of relationships, circumstances, and environments. You see how it's all complicated, how it goes together. And so you even look at this idea of weariness and faint-heartedness. It's both this remarkably complex interplay between the physical and the emotional and the spiritual, the external and the internal. And I think he's bringing both of those two things together very intentionally. And one of the things that fascinates me is, I don't know if you've heard the phrase, medicine 3.0. And so there's a guy I like to listen to. His name's Peter Attia. He has a great book. I think it's called Outlive. Anybody know? I'm just kind of flying off the cuff right now. It's in the notes, so this is dangerous. But really good book. I think it's called Outlive. It's about longevity. So medicine 3.0 is the idea that you take in the holistic person. And it's really intriguing to me that that's considered like cutting edge advancement when you can look back and that's the kind of thing the Bible has been doing for thousands of years, taking in the holistic person. And this is exactly what he's doing. He said, you can become weary in soul and then faint hearted in body. And then both of those can be dealt with. And you look to Jesus. I think this is why it's paralleling these two things. The solution for the weariness is joy. Jesus' joy propelled him. That dealt with the weariness. And then the solution for the faint-heartedness is the endurance. He kept going. So he needed both of those two things to deal with the holistic problem of the weary heart. It wasn't just one, and it wasn't just the other. But if you think about it, I mean, we've all felt weary. There's all been moments of life and situations where we want to quit and ask, is this even worth it? And you can take that word, this, and fill in that word with dozens of different things. And there's probably something in your life right now where you're wondering, is this even worth it? So think about something in your life. Are you limping through life and feeling spiritually exhausted? Or do you feel like you've lost the strength to endure? Now you look in this passage, and I love it because it gives us the solution. But the solution might be a little different than you think, because our assumption is to think, all right, I got to endure. The way to endure is kind of buck up. I got to get strong. And on the first reading, you might think that's what it means. Therefore, lift up your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees. Come on, bro, get up. Keep running. What's wrong with you? That's actually not quite what it's saying. Let's dig in. The command is to strengthen your feeble arms. I think I mentioned it last week that one of my friends in high school used to take this verse and say it to me every time we'd work out. Come on, man, strengthen those feeble arms. Believe it or not, when I was in high school, I was this height, but I only weighed 180 pounds, which is a lot less than I weigh now. And they used to call, my friends called me the string bean instead of Ben. You know, very creative, you know. So the command to strengthen, I think it's an echo of Isaiah 35, strengthen the feeble hands, steady these knees that give away. It's a call, but it's a call to renewal. Not just endurance. There's two words here that you really don't have to know Greek, but you'll get the flow. That idea of make straight again, and then list that word to put out of joint and make straight, and then in 13, be healed. That Greek word is therapuo. And that word for make straight is ana therapuo. So you don't have to know Greek to know therapuo is where we get our word therapy. And ana again, therapy again, to heal again, therapy. So the idea of therapy, in essence, is not like, again, like, come on, bro, get in the gym and let's see your gains. The idea is you've been broken and you're coming to therapy and strengthen that broken knee. Now, since the beginning of the year at our house, we've had the opportunity to have a firsthand experience of what it means to have therapy on a broken knee. And it's very different than different types of exercise and strength training. You have to be, you're being healed of something. That's the call. The call is not just keep running. The call is to come and be healed, to be put back together again. Look, it's so that what is lame or what is broken may not be broken anymore, but may be healed. It's come to therapy. Jesus is not telling you just to push through, just to work harder, just to grin and bear it and dig deep. What he's saying is come and to be healed. Come and be restored. And look at the pathway. Make level paths for your feet. Here he's quoting Proverbs 4:26. Make level paths for your feet and take only ways that are firm. This is clearing a path so you can follow and say, all right, what's going to keep me from walking along this straight and narrow path? He's already mentioned several things. It can be unconfessed sin. It can be the spiritual neglect. It can be this weight that we put on ourselves. And then there's the promise, so that what is lame may be healed. So the goal is not survival, it's restoration. It's come to the therapy, to be put back together, to be healed. It's not just push through, it's to be remade so you can run with endurance. Run with joy. Have you ever seen, like, there's two types of runners in the world. There's people who are running because they think it's good for them, and then there's people who are running because they enjoy it. You know, probably every 3 or 4 years, and it only happens for the first 2 weeks in January, I get this terrible idea that I'm gonna start running, and so I try it. And a couple years ago, I decided to try and run, and I was running in our neighborhood, and I was hating the world, hating my life, and hating this neighborhood, and I was just drudging through the neighborhood, and I was actually in front of this school. It was in the sidewalk in front of this school, and I was, you couldn't even call it running, because I was going about a 15-minute mile pace. And then I saw coming, it was like two steamrollers, coming like this, and there was another guy about my size, and he was coming along, and he was running about the same pace as I was, probably about this, maybe even a little larger, about the same girth that I was. But I looked at it, like, he was running with such a different gait and countenance. And you could almost hear, like, coming out of his AirPods, the 1980s Motley Crue hair metal music, because he wasn't just running, he was, like, drumming at the same time. And I was thinking, like, there's such a difference right now between him and I, because I hate my life right now, and all I want to do is be back at home, and he's like rocking out to some 1980s music, and whatever he's doing, he's enjoying himself. And the goal of the gospel is to get you to a place where you are enjoying yourself. Like, running with joy. It is not grin and bear it because I think it's good for me, so I'm going to keep going. You got to get in tune with the rhythm of redemption so you're running through life with joy. And so the question is, how do you get there? How do you move to that place? And I think the key is found in verse 12 and 15. See to it that you don't fail to obtain the grace. Grace is that fuel. Grace is that energy. Trying to run without grace is trying to run without any hydration, is trying to run without that joy. So that's the first danger, the weary heart. And we'll move quicker through the second two. The next one's the trap of bitterness, the trap of a bitter heart. Look in verse 15. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, and that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. That no one is sexually immoral or unholy like Esau. So there's this trap of a bitter heart that can spring up. And this is a biblical allusion to Deuteronomy 29:18, and bitterness in Israel led to the apostasy of the people and this idolatry. And it's so interesting that this bitterness in their heart led to community-wide apostasy. And bitterness doesn't just affect you, it can affect many. And it's so challenging because it says, see to it that none of it, that no one fails, no one around you. You know, we're responsible for one another. And that bitterness can become this deeply rooted poison that then seeps out and affects one another. You know, the image here is like this weed in the garden that if it gets unchecked, it grows and it starts choking other plants around it. So you think about like the bitterness in your own heart doesn't just choke your heart. It will spread out and start choking the hearts of those around you. So you think about, are there past hurts that you're refusing to release? Or when you hold on to grudges, it doesn't just hold on to you. It wants to start spreading out and grabbing on to others. Bitterness is a trap that doesn't just want to trap you, it wants to also trap those around you. And I think that one of the connections there is it will blind you to grace in your life and in the life of others. But the beautiful thing about what Jesus has done is at the cross, he bore all of the bitterness. He bore all of the betrayal so that it can be broken and we can be set free. You know, he can break the bitterness so that we can be set free. One of the things that he talks about, the cup that we'll get to in a minute that he drank, is he drank the bitter cup all the way down to the end. So he drank the bitterness so we can be set free from it. But then it goes right into this foolish trade of the short-sighted heart. You know, one thing is when you're going through pain, when you're going through difficulty, the only thing you really want is for it to stop. And often you'll do anything for it to be done. And then you see this in Esau. It's a little different, but he sold something. He chose the temporary and lost the eternal. This is the illustration of Esau. It says, Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. It says, for you know that afterward, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no chance to repent, though he sought it with tears. He chose temporary comfort over the eternal blessing. If you're not familiar with his story, he had been off maybe a day, maybe a season, probably a couple days out hunting, and then he came back home just famished, and his brother had cooked some stew, had a home-cooked meal waiting, but not for him, and he was so famished he wanted some and didn't want to wait to prepare his own food. His brother wouldn't just give him the food, and he bargained his, in essence, he was the firstborn and had the inheritance coming, and he traded his inheritance so he could have that meal right then. And so he traded that, and the story's not really just about food, it's about short-sightedness. It's about somebody in crisis making the false choice. He chose immediate relief over lasting reward. And so often, those are the things we do. We make those choices. We choose pleasure in the moment over purity, comfort over commitment, approval of others over obedience. Kind of if you keep the marathon illustration, it's somebody who's been running the marathon and then they quit and stop at mile 25. And just say, I've had enough. I'm done here. And so you think, all right, the image here is the birthright, the inheritance, what's ours and promised in Christ. And so the question for us, do we trade the birthright for some type of temporary satisfaction. But now what I want to cycle back to after that, the short-sighted heart, is, all right, what's the reward for all of this? What's the reward for running the race? And here we see it in Hebrews 12, 14. It says, look back at 13, and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. Now think back in Hebrews. In Hebrews 11, it says God rewards those who seek him, and the reward for the seeking heart, the reward for the heart that keeps going, the reward for the heart that endures is that eventually they will see his face. The goal of ending the race is not finishing, but it's encountering the one who's waiting for us at the finish line. Revelation 22:4, they will see his face. The greatest prize of the race is God himself. When it talks about without holiness, no one will see the Lord, the goal of holiness is not a legalistic rigidity of doing all of the right things. The goal is so you can see God, so you can come into his presence. You know, the original audience of Hebrews were tempted to compromise under pressure, and we're tempted to settle for lesser things than seeing him instead of striving for him. We're tempted to choose comfort over consecration, approval over purity, worldly pleasures over the presence of God. In our race, we can be tricked into thinking that holiness is burdensome, but we end realizing it's the pathway to joy. It's what leads us into his presence. We began the service where Cynthia read this kind of medley of scriptures. Now I want to end going back to those so you can hear this rhythm. But Matthew 5, 8, Jesus says, blessed are the pure in heart. What is their reward? Is that they will see God. Jesus is directly connecting that purity of heart with the ultimate prize of seeing God. He's reinforcing the idea that holiness is not just about our moral effort, but it's preparing our hearts for the greatest vision possible. And then Paul celebrates at the end of his life in 2 Corinthians 4 that I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And henceforth, there's laid up for me the crown of righteousness. There's a reward. There's a crown which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. But not just to me, all those who have loved his appearing, have longed for his appearing, have loved coming to his presence. So he's connecting, finishing the race with this reward. And that reward is his appearing, is seeking after him. And then Psalm 16:11, you have made known to me the path of life. Remember that imagery of path, make straight the path. You have to get on the path. You're running on this path. Well, what is that path of life? It's your, in your presence is the fullness of joy. That's where it is. That's the fuel. It's the fullness. And that fullness is in his presence. And then at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. So at God's right hand, in his presence is the fullness of joy. That's what's going to fuel our race. And then the goal is to find eternal pleasures. And where are they located? They're at his right hand. Now look back in Hebrews 12. What or who is at the right hand of God? Jesus Christ is now seated at his right hand. So we are running this race so we can come to the right hand of God the Father, so we can find the one who is seated at his right hand, and there is where we find eternal pleasures, seated at his right hand. And what will we see there? Revelation 22:4, they will see his face, and his name will forever be on their foreheads. The end of the race is face-to-face communion with the one who promises to give eternal pleasures. Not here today, gone tomorrow, but forevermore. So the greatest reward for the seeking heart is not just a crown, but it's closeness to Christ himself. So what's the motivation as we enter into this final leg of the race, or the last part of the game, of which he's already scored the decisive winning goal? Isaiah 40:31, but those who wait for the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary. For all those weary, they can keep running and not be weary. They will walk and not be faint. I love the movement. They'll mount up with wings like eagles. Sometimes in life, you will just fly. It'll seem so easy. Other times, you'll run and you'll not grow weary. Sometimes you'll just walk. And it's just one step in front of the other. But you'll always keep moving towards the finish line into his presence. So as we cycle back and just look at those three, what does it mean? Maybe you're a weary Christian and you're just limping through life, spiritually exhausted. Jesus doesn't tell you, just keep going. You know, buck up. You know, man up. Keep going. What he says is, come to me. Come to me and be healed. You know, come to me and be healed. Maybe you're tempted and overtaken. You don't just push through in your own strength. Or maybe you've found yourself, you've just been running, but you've been running the wrong race. You know, look to him. Look to him and run a different race. Or maybe you think about the root of bitterness. Maybe someone has hurt you. You've been afflicted. You've been betrayed. Go to the cross, because that's where bitterness can go to die, and let grace take its place. Holding on to that bitterness will keep you from experiencing his grace to the fullness. You know, the beautiful things, Jesus didn't come to make us bitter. He came to set us free from that. Or maybe you think about Esau and the way he traded his eternal inheritance for the short-term thing. You know, don't trade God's best for you for the easy path. And like Esau, realize that you've lost something too great and realize it too late. And then maybe as we think about that final call, maybe you're a mature believer who's been running for so long and you just need encouragement. You're doing well. Keep going. You're almost there. Keep going. Or maybe you're doubtful and just wondering, oh, is it worth it? I've been running so long. Fix your eyes on him. Every sacrifice is worth it. Keep running. Holiness is not about restriction. It's about exaltation and seeing him. So that's the final gospel call. The call is to come. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. So this morning, are you weary? Look to him. Are you bitter? Let his grace heal you. Are you settling for less in your life? Look to him and seek his eternal reward. Are you longing for the finish line? Run towards his face. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for your grace and mercy. Thank you for the way you can redeem, renew, and empower us. I pray for everyone here in this room today, wherever they find themselves in this race, whether they find themselves at the very beginning and have all types of energy and excitement and hope. Help them to run with all of that energy and enthusiasm and point them in the right direction. I pray for anyone who is wounded and weary and they feel like, I just can't keep going. I pray that you would heal them, bind up the brokenhearted and bind up the wounds that have been broken so they can not just run, but run with joy and run with enthusiasm. Now pray for those who've been running for a long time and they need just further encouragement. So you're doing well. You've done well. Keep going. So I pray that whatever help is needed, you give that in its moment of need. In your name I pray. Amen.